Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, second line down. Amalei Rav, the Ravasi. Lo tidor b'mato, don't live in a city, delo tzanif ba susayo. That the horses do not neyin, velo nabach ba kalba. And the dogs do not bark. So it's a practical reason that he's explaining it to him here. Because if there are no horses that neigh, not that there are horses and they don't neigh, but that means there's just no horses in the city. And therefore, you don't have the protection or the cavalry to support the city, to chase after people, to catch ganavim. It's a negative in general for the city. And lo bachba kalba, and that no dog barks in it, again, both on the side of protection, as well as the other side of this, which might have to do with the shadim, that there are no dogs that are barking. V'altu dor bi'ir, deresh mata asya. Do not live in a city in which the head of the city, mayor, the governor, is a doctor. So this is similar, as the Rashbam says to yesterday, don't live in a city where the Talmidei Chachamim run the show, because again, they're busy learning, the doctor's busy performing refuah, and nothing gets done in the city. You have to have people that are dedicated to the tzibur who are doing the tarchei ha-tzibur. Lo tinsiv tarte, do not marry two women. V'in nisavt tarte, if you marry two, nasiv tlat, get onto a third one. Now you could argue that it's a din of zugot, but that's not the way the Rashbam explains it over here. He explains that if you marry two women, they will conspire against you. To marry a third one, so there's always a tattletale that will let you know that they're conspiring against you. So you can have a duopoly, but it's hard to have three people collude together, and because of that, it'll protect you. Amar lei Rav, the Rav Kahana, hafuch b'nevelta, v'lo tipuch b'milei. You should deal with nevelot, and not deal in words. I mean, either deal in the practical things, be involved in business, but don't just trade words with people, emptiness. Or you could also argue that flip nevelot, but don't flip your words. I mean, don't change your mind. You could read it that way as well. Pashut nevelta b'shuka. Go spread out your wares in the shuk, the nevela, the skins that you're going to sell in the shuk, or flay the animals in the shuk. B'shakal igra, and make a living. Velo tema, don't say, ka'ano ano, I'm a priest. Gavra rabo ano, I'm a big gun. Vesanya be milta, and it's beneath my dignity to do this. To make a living is a requirement, and don't say that it's beneath your dignity to take care of these things, or I'm too big to do such a thing. Salak leigra shirutech ba'adech. When you go up to the roof, you have to take your provisions with you. Everywhere you go, make sure you take your lunch with you. Don't go somewhere without the food with you. Mea kari b'mata b'zuza, and that's even when you can buy 100 gourds in the city for Zuz, tuktei knafecha nihavu. Make sure you have it under your cloak. So you always have your provisions, always have your food with you. Don't count on the fact that you can buy the food later, you can get it later, even if it's cheap. Make sure that you have whatever you need with you. And if it is cheap, you buy it and make sure that you have it with you. Amalei Rav, the Chia Berei. Rav said to Chia's son, Lo tishte sama. Don't be involved in drugs. So it's both. Rashi says it and the Rashbam says it very eloquently, which is, here he says, lo tishteh, don't drink, but don't just drink samim, ipnei, shenikvalahem veset, because they cycle. Ve'elibcha sholcha, and then you're going to have a desire for them, ve'tafsid ma'ot, and you'll lose money. You'll become addicted, and in that addiction cycle, you're going to crave whatever this is, and then you're going to lose money because you're going to always have to expend money to fill that craving. But if you refuah lo tishtei, even if it's for medical reasons, if there's another way to get around it. It's a very, I think, lucid explanation of the problem with drugs. But he says, don't get involved in these things because they will haunt you forever. Lo tishaver nigra. Do not extend your stride. We saw before nigre, which was walking over the mesh vochim, which is to take a step or a stride. So the shaver nigres, do not extend your stride, which is don't walk a psia gasa, because it takes away mim or enav, it takes away from your eyesight. Below te'akir kacha, do not have a tooth extracted. Even if you have a toothache or something's wrong, don't have your tooth taken out. Below tikane bechivya, below tikane bearma'a. Do not provoke a snake. Don't play games or provoke a snake. And do not provoke a arama, is an aramit woman. Tan Rabbanan, Gimel Ein Mitkanim Behen. Three people you don't start up with. You don't poke fun at them. You don't get them upset at you. Even though they don't seem to be harmful at this time. Ve'eluhein, Nachri Katan, a young non-Jew. Ve'nachash Katan, a young snake. Ve'tamid Katan, or a young Talmud Chacham, a young student. My time, to machutayu acharei odnahu kai. Goes there, kingship sits behind their ear. This must have been either a colloquial expression or some expression that says that one day they're going to be big. And when they become big, they're going to take revenge on those people that provoked them or bothered them while they were younger. Amarle Rav, Ba'aibo Bray. It's a very interesting conversation. Rav says to Aibo, his son, Tarche Becha B'Shmaita, I tried to get you to learn Torah, V'lo Mistaya Milta, and you were unsuccessful at learning Torah. Now here, Shmaita over here is memorization and the remembering of the Girsa. It didn't take hold with him, so he realizes that his son Aibo is not going to be a Talmud Chacham. Says, Ta, Agamreich Mibli Da'amo, let me give you some worldly wisdom so that you can utilize that to move on, because you're not going to be living in the world of Torah. Adchala karech, while the sand is still fresh on your feet, zvinach zovin, sell whatever you brought back. If you went to bring merchandise from somewhere to sell, while your sand is still on your feet, meaning when you freshly get back, sell off everything that you have. Don't sit on the merchandise. Komile zavin v'techarat. Everything you sell, you can regret. Bar michamra. Except for wine. The zavin v'lo techarat. You can sell it and never regret it. So when the prices are rising, every time you sell something, you always regret selling it because the price is higher. With wine, don't regret it because wine can go bad. It can become vinegar. And because of that, you should not regret it. Shadei kisech patach sakech. Open up your money pouch, your wallet, and then open up your wares. Meaning, accept the cash, get payment first, and then give away whatever you're selling. So, cash up front, and then you sell. Kava me'ara, velokura me'igra. It's better to have a smaller amount from down on the ground than a kur, a large amount from up on the roof. The expression meaning it's better to work close to home than far from home. Tamra bechaluzech, if you have dates in your kli, the beit sudna rahit, run to the beer maker. The date beer, make it into beer right away and sell it. Vad kama.
When is that true that you should run to the beer maker to take your dates so you don't eat them in the interim and lose them out? That's when you have a quantity that's less than
Marova Tlata Sa'a. To 3 Sa'a, you should run. Amar Rapapa, Idalo Ramai Shikra Loi Atre. We saw before again that Rapapa was involved with beer. Comes up a number of times in Shas. Here Rav Papa says, had I not been involved in making beer, I would have not have been so wealthy. We saw back in Malkum Shnagu that Rav Papa says, because I married a Kohenet, that's why I was rich. So Tosfos would ask the question here, well, which one was it? Was it the beer or the woman who was a Kohen? In the end, Tosfos says, ha, v'ha, gamile. But they were both. The two of them together, that's what made him wealthy. It's an expression that he's borrowing from Levi, was a Talmud of Rabbi, who gets injured. The Gemara Ver says, how did he get injured? And the Gemara tells two different stories. In the end, the Gemara answers, Havaha Gamale, they both caused it. Both issues, or both incidents, are what caused the problem. Had I not been involved in making beer, lo yatre, I would have not have become wealthy. My sudna, sudna is the word used to describe a beer maker. Amrav Chista, sudna eh. It's a great secret, u'gmilut chasadim, and you can perform gmilut chasadim. So sodna, it's a great secret because it makes the person wealthy, and therefore it's a worthwhile trade to know. And then gmilut chasadim, and one and then if they're wealthy, they're able to perform gmilut chasadim. Amra papa, kol agav, gavyo boy. Anything that is sold on an IOU or involves a shtar is going to require collection. Kol ashrai, anything that's sold on credit, safekate, safek loate. You're always in doubt of whether you're actually going to collect on it. Vida'ati, and even when you do collect, ma'ot ra'ot ninu. They come with bad coins. Where the Rishbam explains it, you're going to get it zuz. You're going to get it basically to come and pay you in pennies or agurot. In their day, bad coins means that the value of the coin was not only determined by what was printed on it, but the intrinsic value of the coin. If a person is going to show up to pay you, they pay you in zuzim. Zuzim are the going currency that get used a lot, so those coins are worn down. rather than larger coins, the silver or the gold coins, which probably held their intrinsic value longer and were less in use. So this person's going to pay you back piecemeal, and they're going to give you these small coins that are bad. So even when you do get paid back, it's not going to be the best manner of payment. So the suggestion is, take cash up front instead of having to go out and have to make collections or not know whether you're going to get your credit paid. Gimel Devarim. I'm Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Anshei Yerushalayim. There are three things that Rabbi Yochanan said over from the people of Yerushalayim. Shata yotzei lemelchuma teitzei berishona. When you go out to battle, don't be in the front lines. Elo teitzei b'achrona, but be in the back. Now, you would have thought the reason that is because you don't want to be the one who sees the battle first. But Rabbi says no, because if you retreat, you want to be the first one running back. Kedei shetikanes berishona. So that you should be the first one, if they're retreating, that can run back. Vaseh Shabbat chacho, v'atitzarech lebriot. Make your Shabbat like a weekday, and do not rely on others to support you. This we saw again yesterday. It's the same memra of Rabbi Akiva that we saw yesterday. And again, I mentioned yesterday the tour that mentions the fact that he was extremely impoverished, and he asked his father numerous times of whether Aseh Shabbat Chachol applies only to someone who is yet to go to charity, but once you've gone to charity, this no longer applies. Or if you're already going to a charity, you still should have to upkeep this Aseh Shabbat Chachol to not impose on others. And he said his father never gave him a clear answer about that. And then the Torah continues about what he sees or thought. Tosafot asks over here, based on the Gemara in Beitza, which we'll get to, the Gemara in Beitza says that Botzat Shabbatot v'yomim tovim, they don't go to the cheshbon. From the beginning of the year, Rosh Hashanah, it's kavua what your earnings, your panasa will be. But your expenditures for Shabbat and Yom Tov are outside of that cheshbon. So he says, if that's the case, why not spend over here if it's outside the cheshbon? It says, if you give less, you'll get less. If you give more, you'll get more, meaning that Hashem takes care of it. So he says, Hainu b'shel im yeshlo. So Tosafot qualifies and says that if you have the means to spend. It doesn't mean go spend other people's money and then Hashem will take care of it. No, it's if you have the means to spend, and then if you spend more, it won't matter whether you spend less or more, because the more you spend, it'll be paid back. The less you spend, it'll also be paid back. So you may as well spend more on Shabbat and Yom Tov because it doesn't go towards the cheshbon. True that the Gemara over there also says, Ulevu alai, that borrow against me and then I will pay, which is the zemer that you sing on Shabbat, which is Ulevu alai. You will borrow on my account and I will pay it back. Now over there, it sounds like you can even take money that you don't have. So it must be that the borrowing over there is done in a way where you are lacking liquidity, you can say. He has the means to do it, he just lacks liquidity to do it now, so he borrows money to do it, and Hashem says he'll take care of it. Although truthfully, the Gemara there really sounds like you're borrowing money when you don't have it, and that Hashem will take care of it. Soon maybe you have the salary coming up, whatever it is that the explanation, but that's a little harder to explain or to reconcile with Aseh Shabbat Chachol. Rabbi Mishtadel Imi Shasham Sacheket Lo, something mentioned yesterday as well, which is, you should partner with people who things are going well with. You see somebody with good mazel, it's worthwhile to partner with them. There are three things that Rabbi Shub and Levi said in the name of the people of Yerushalayim. Al terbe begnut or begagot. Klomar, al dehi ragil lasot vracha beferhesia bemakom megule. Don't do a lot in public. Do not put yourself in a position where you're always in public view. Shemai Sechaya, because the incident took place, the reference here is to David and Bathsheba. And David is outside and he sees Bathsheba on the roof doing her, getting changed or whatever it was that caught his eye, but she was out in public. Because of that, it caused the problem or the incident. So don't do things in public, especially things that are private. Do not do in public. But in general, don't put yourself in the public eye because you're just asking for trouble. Bitcha Bagra, your daughter has matured. Shechrer Avdecha V'teinla. Free your slave and give it to her, meaning that to marry off quickly. She not be sitting around once she has reached the age of maturity. Be careful with your wife from her first son-in-law. My time. What's the reason? Problem of, call it incest here, problem of illicit relations. It's a problem of money, that your wife will expend money on her first son-in-law without holding back. Ha, vaha, the Gemara concludes in the end that they're both true. That they're both issues with the woman, the wife, and the first son-in-law. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Shlosha, Minochalei Olam Haba. Everyone who's sitting here can be proud of this. There are three people who inherit Olam Haba. Eluhain. These are they. The first one is Hadar Be'eretz Yisrael, one who lives in Eretz Yisrael. Reason why it's Kedai to come to Eretz Yisrael is because Hadar Be'eretz Yisrael is Nochel Olam Haba. V'amegadel Benav L'Talmud Torah. Someone brings up his children in the world of Torah to learn Torah. Someone who makes Abdullah on wine on Motzei Shabbat. Gemara says, Mahi, what's the big deal? He leaves over wine from Kiddush to Abdullah, meaning that he doesn't have a lot of wine, and he makes Kiddush. And now he needs wine for Abdullah, so he has a choice. He can drink that wine during the meals, or he can save it for Abdullah. So the fact is that he withheld, restrained himself from drinking that wine during the meals, and held it over to Abdullah. So that's the praise, that this person had enough self-control to not drink the wine during the meals and to use it for Abdullah. And that's why it's someone who is a Ben Olam Haba. Better not to use the Chemar Medina, but to actually use wine and not drink the wine during the meals. Tosfot does say, it's interesting, he says that we know from the Gemara before that Kiddush Laila is Kodem the Kiddush Yom, and that Kibud Yom is Kodem the Kibud Laila, and then Kiddush Laila is Kodem the Kibud Hayom. The Kiddush at night is before the eating during the day. But he says all of them are before Havdalah. So why aren't you drinking the wine in the meal during the day to be for Kibud Yom? So he answers in the end, very interesting answer. He says that the wine that you use for Kiddush on Shabbat morning qualifies for Kibud Yom. Because the Kiddush of the morning is only Bari Pri Agafen. So in the end, that what you're drinking that wine, even though you're making quote-unquote Kiddush on it, it's also a part, quote-unquote, part of the meal. And because of that, it qualifies as Kibud Yom. So if you already made Kiddush for the morning, then you don't have to have additional wine during the meal to be classified as Kibud Yom. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Shlosha machriz aleihem HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'kol yom. There are three individuals about whom Hashem announces each day. The announcement being that these people are significant tzaddikim because of the circumstances that they're in, and they are still able to continue, which is Aravak Hadar B'krach, a bachelor who lives in the city, ve'enu chuteh, and does not sin. Valani amachzir veidah lebaleah, a poor person who returns a lost object to its baalim. Valashir hamaser perutav b'sina'ah, and a wealthy individual takes off masrot in private, not in a public way. So all three of these people, Hashem is machrizanehem, that they are unbelievable people because the temptation to do or to do wrong is so high, and they're able to overcome that temptation. That speaks to the quality of the individual. Rav Safra, Ravak Hadar B'Krachava. Rav Safra was actually a bachelor that was living in a city. Tana Kamei D'Rava V'Rav Safra. And this memra was said over in front of Rava and Rav Safra. Tzahavu Panav D'Rav Safra. Rav Safra's face either lit up when he was excited to hear this, or he was embarrassed about the fact that they were saying this because he felt it might have been said about himself. Amalei Rava, Rava said, don't worry about it. Lav gugomar. It's not said about you. Ela kagon Rav Chanina, Rav Hoshaya. Said about Rav Chanina, Rav Hoshaya, Davu ush pakapei be'arad Yisrael. They were shoemakers, blacksmiths in Eretz Yisrael. V'have yatvei b'shuka d'zonot. And their shop was in the red light district, in the less pleasant neighborhood. They were in the shuk of the zonot. V'avdilu mesani d'zonot. And that was their profession. They used to make shoes for the harlots. And the harlots used to come into them to have their shoes made. Inu mistakle behu, or inhi mistakle behu, the women, the zanot, were looking at them, at the rabbanon. Vinu lo madlin enayu listiklu behu. But the rabbanon never looked up to see the zanot that entered. They just looked at their feet to make sure that they got the right shoes. Umumtayu hochi. It's a beautiful thing. The zanot in Eretz Yisrael, who were familiar with Rav Chanina and Rav Hoshaya, when they used to take a shvua, b'chayein rabbanon kadisha de ba'arav de Israel, that they used to take their shvua. What was it? When you take a shvua, you usually say it about something that's significant. So you take a shvua, the Torah tells us that you take a shvua b'shem Hashem. That's what is significant. There is an obligation, according to many of the Rishonim, to take a shvua b'shem Hashem, because that's a Kiddush Hashem. That a person takes a shvua b'shem Hashem and then carries it out, then that's a Kiddush Hashem, that you took the Shavua B'Shem Hashem and you actually keep your word. The Shavua B'Shem Hashem, today we're afraid to do that, but the Shavua B'Shem Hashem is supposed to be also a positive idea, that Hashem is so significant that your Shavua is made B'Shem Hashem. Also, people take it shua b'chayei melech, by the life of the king. Also, something of significance, they take a shua. So here, for the zonot, when they took a shua, what was considered to be significant to them were the holy rabbis in Eretz Yisrael. When they took a shua, they understood the holiness of these rabbonon, and therefore they elevated them. And they, when they took a shua, they used them as the, we'll call it, the equivalent of a nikitat chefetz, holding a religious object in hand. Here they use the rabbonon, the life of these rabbonon, because people saw that as being significant. And if you took a shua, right, you would not violate such a shua because of the significance of the individual you mentioned in the shua. Right, shlosha kodesh baruch hu avan. Three people Hashem loves. Mi she'enu kois, someone doesn't get angry. Mi she'enu mishtaker, someone who does not get drunk. Umi she'enu mamid al midotav. And someone who does not, the opposite might be mavir al midotav, which is where it uses other places, someone who is mavir al midotav, is someone who is not makpid. Someone doesn't get angry when he's crossed or doesn't get upset when people wrong him. So here, mi she'enu mamid al midotav is maybe the equivalent of mavir al midotav, which is someone who does not stand on his midot. Someone who's not makpid about his own kavod or when people cross him or when people do wrong to him. Shlosha HaKadosh Baruch Hu Son'an. There are three people that Hashem dislikes or hates. Hamedaber echad bepeh ve'echad belev. Someone who is not, I would say, honest. It does not reflect his true feelings. Vayodea edut b'chevero en ve'enu medidlo. Someone who has evidence or testimony on behalf of his friend and he does not testify on his behalf. He could help him and he doesn't. Ve'oreh davar erva b'chevero. Someone who sees something negative. Umeid bo yechidi, and then he's a single aid, and he goes ahead and he testifies against this individual when he is a single aid. Very good. Kiha de tuvia chata. Tuvia did something wrong. Va'ata zigud lechude. Zigud was an aid to the fact that Tuvia did something wrong. So zigud came as a sole aid. Va'asid be kameid rapapa, and then he gave testimony in front of rapapa that this person had acted inappropriately. Nagde le Zigud. Rapapa went ahead and gave makot to Zigud. Malay, Zigud says to him, Tuvia chata v'zigud mingad. What happened? Tuvia sins and I'm getting the makot? Amalayin says yes. Dichtiv, lo yukum eid echad be'ish. A single aid cannot make a difference. Va'at l'chudeich asad be. And you came alone to testify. Shem ra ba'alma kamafik be. All you're doing is giving him a bad name. A single aid has no impact in terms of the halachic process in terms of Beit Din. Since you have no impact, then testifying only does one thing. Gives a bad reputation to the individual, and you haven't benefited anything in terms of the Din, or procedurally, you haven't benefited anything. Obviously, you have to be careful with this, because there's a possibility that there's another single aid out there, and the two of them could get together. So I think that has to be clarified. That also has to do with the Gemara in Makot, exactly how two Eidim can get together. It's not so simple. Just because two of you saw something doesn't mean necessarily that you together become now a kat edim. But leaving that aside, a person should not testify in these cases because there's no benefit from his testimony. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Rav mutar lesanoto. You may not testify, but you yourself who knows this individual has done something wrong, it's permissible for you to hate the individual. It's permissible that you have dislike towards this individual because of the way that they are acting. Shenemar, tireh chamor sonacha roveitz tachat masol. You see your friend, well, it's not really your friend, it's your enemies, chamor, under the burden, bending under the burden, then you should help him out. So my sone, what does it mean? There's a case where you can be permitted, you're permitted to hate someone because it's sonacha. So Gemara wants to clarify, who is this person? Ilei masonei nachri. If you're talking about that, it's someone that's a non-Jew, Atanya, sonei shamru, sonei Yisrael. Talking about here is someone that you dislike is a Jew, not a non-Jew. So that can't be the answer. Velo sonei nachri. Elav shita sonei Yisrael. We're talking about a Jew. Umishar yelamisne. Since when is it permissible to hate a Jew? Vaktiv lo tisnat achicha bilvavecha. You may not harbor hatred against a fellow Jew. Ela deika sade da avedisura. Kulame nami misne sanile. Wait a minute. If there are edim that saw him do something wrong, then you're no different than anybody else. Just like you hate him, somebody else has an obligation to hate him because he's doing wrong. He's sinning. So maishnahai. Why do you call him sonacha? That means he's your enemy. Well, he's everybody's enemy then. He's a public enemy. He's not just your enemy. Elav ki hai gavno. The chazi be'iu devar erva must be our case here. where he sees him doing something wrong, and he is a single aid that can testify about it, so he makes no difference in terms of the lucky process for everybody else, but for himself, he has permission to hate him because he knows the information. He has the evidence. I think when they talk about Sone over here, it means versus a Kaver. So you don't have to be close to such an individual. Distance yourself from such an individual. That's how I would put the Sone over here rather than something like the today, the sense of bitterness and hatred. I don't think that's what they're talking about over here. So here it says Devar Erva, which has a particular serious violation, but something that is, right, inappropriate, I would say. Today, there is a requirement technically to be Sone, someone who is Mechalel Shabbat. They're in this category. It's just a question today if there's the dispensation because of Tinok Shenishba, that these people don't have the status of sinners. So once you've done that, then you've eliminated the ability or the right to distance these people from you because they're really not sinning intentionally or out of any real understanding. It's because they don't know better or they have Mesorah from their parents to do it this way and they don't have a way to, even though they know about Shabbat and all these other things, they don't have a way to break away from it because they think there's another Mesorah that it's okay. So if you think that Tinok Shenishba, then in those cases, you may not have these types of feelings. All right, that's something that's debated about individuals, especially in Eretz Yisrael, whether they have a status of Tinok Shenishba in these cases. But it's really something here, it's not a Devar Erva, something that has negative connotations to it. Pretty obvious, they're not something where it's a personal issue. All right, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar, mitzvah l'sonoto. Not only is it a right, you should hate him, Shneamar, Yirat Hashem Sinat Ra. That the one who is fearful of heaven hates evil. They go hand in hand. If you fear heaven, then you're going to dislike evil. You're not going to want to befriend those that are evil. It's a very interesting question. Can you tell your Rebbe about it? So yes, you can't go to Beit Din. Yes, you can't testify in public about it. But can you tell the Rav about this so that he's aware of what's going on? He's aware of this individual and either whether he can provide him help or whether he can distance him. If his Rebbe would believe him like the equivalent of two, then he can tell him. Otherwise, don't bother. So it's the same question, which is, what type of status do you have in your eyes of your Rebbe? If you're still like a single aid in Beit Din towards your Rebbe, then nothing has changed. Because for your Rebbe, you're also a single aid and all you'll do is then cast dispersions on this individual, but he'll never really be sure that you're telling the truth. On the other hand, if you have a certain amount of nemanut, you have a certain amount of trust with your Rebbe, and your Rebbe, if he hears something from you, he buys into it in an absolute sense, meaning that it's the equivalent of two people coming and testifying, then you can speak because he will believe you, he'll act on it, but he won't have spekot. So it won't just be a question of smearing this person's name. He will know that you're speaking the truth, and he'll know what happened. It'd be the equivalent as if he had heard it from two edim. Tan Rabbanan, Shlosha Chayehem Einam Chayim. There are three people whose lives are not real good lives, not worth living. Harachmanim, those that are merciful. Varatchanim, those that tempers. Vanini Adat, and those that are delicate or istanis, spoiled. In all these cases, the Rashbam says that it means in an excessive way. Obviously, to be Rahman, there's nothing wrong with being someone who's merciful. It's just that if you're excessively merciful, Ratach, also, to get angry at certain times is permissible. Ratchan is someone who is excessively angry, has a high temper, is always getting angry. And Vanini Adat, also, somebody who is particular about everything. And therefore, it becomes difficult for them to enjoy anything because they're always particular. That's what the Rishbam says about these individuals. Something that is consistently or persistently in them. Truth is that these people never have any peace. They're always at unease because of this. Whether it's because you have a temper, you're always at unease, so you're never settled. Or anini adat can never become comfortable because they're always particular. And the rachmanim are always being merciful. They can't get comfortable because they always have these feelings. They're overly emotional. They worry or emotional about it, and therefore they will not reach a point of rest. Rav Yosef, kulu itnehu bi. Rav Yosef says about himself, I have all of these items. Plus, we know that Rav Yosef also was blind. So, the current Rav Yosef did not have an easy life. Tana banan, shlosha sonim zedzeh. There are three types of species, individuals that hate each other. Ve'elohin, aklavim, dogs, don't get along. Tana golin, chickens, v'chaveirin. Now, chaveirin is interesting. Chaveirin are our friends. Chaver is used in the Gemara in two different senses. One is a chaver, which is a chaver in the sense of pushim, someone who kept the dinim of Tuma and Tahara, but it's also used in the Gemara and Shabbat to refer to a Persian sect that believed in the fire god and that were extremely harsh and difficult people. And that's most likely what it's probably referring to over here. These Chaverim are those individuals. There it might even be that they were cannibals. So that these Chaverim were not exactly the type of people you want to mix with. But not only are you don't want to mix with them, they didn't get along with each other either. So that's the point here. Ve'eshomim avzonot. And some people say, also harlots are distrustful of each other, taking each other's business. So on and so forth. Ve'eshomar av tamidei chachamim shebavel. Also tamidei chachamim bavel are competitive in that way. We have memorot in the Gemara about that, the difference between the tamidei chachamim of bavel and Eretz Yisrael. Tana banan, shlosha uvim ze et ze. There are three people, so this is the opposite side of it, that love each other, meaning that they find comfort in each other's company. Ve'eluhena givim, converts. When they are together, when they have that similar background, they feel more comfortable, get there at each. At ease, vavadim, servants, or slaves. Ve'orvin, and ravens. Arba'a ena dat sovlatan. There are four people who are unacceptable. People cannot understand how this could be possible. It's something that is just, he would say, it's beyond. I can't believe this. Which is, Elohim, Dalge'e, a haughty poor person, Vashir Mikachesh, a wealthy person who lies or cheats, Vizakein Minaef, an elderly person that is licentious, Upranas Mitge'el Etzibur Bechinam, or a leader of the community that rules over them in a harsh manner when it's unnecessary. He leads them with a heavy hand when it's unnecessary. Also, a woman that you divorce once, twice, and then take her back. How come he didn't mention the divorce? Zimna dektubata meruba. Sometimes her ktubah is too big. So he divorces her, but then he realizes he can't pay for it, so he takes her back. So he doesn't have to pay for the ktubah. It might be a matter of circumstance or necessity that he's taking her back, not because he can't make up his mind or that he's going back and forth. He's vacillating with this woman. Inami, yesh lo banim emena. Lo matz migarish lo. Or, he has children from her, and therefore he can't divorce her. It's an important line of the Gemara that many times the people that suffer the most in the divorce are the children, and therefore that should be a consideration, at least if it can be managed, even though it's difficult for parents not to divorce for the children's sake, and not to say that if it's, obviously if the situation's worse in the house because they're not divorced and the children are mushpa, they suffer from that side of it. But these children have to be a consideration in these situations. Five things Canaan commanded to his children. Not that he literally commanded this to his children, but rather it's as if he commanded them children because this is the way that they act. So it's as if they have a mesorah that this is the way to be. Which is number one, avu zedze. Love each other. Take care of each other. Vavu et gazel. Love to steal. Vavu et zima. Love to be involved in licentious behavior. V'san'u et adoneichem, hate your masters, v'al tedabru emet, and do not speak the truth, in that they don't have a moral standing. Now, it's true, we know that from the Torah says about Canaan, that the same thing that says about Mitzrayim, that these two major civilizations, they lack in the moral sense, and that's what the Torah says in Vayikra, do not act like the people of Canaan, and do not like act like Mitzrayim, because they lack the moral, or the morality, or the ethics, that Hashem wants. And if you act like them, Hashem's going to throw you out of the land, just like he's going to throw them out of the land. So we know that Canaan represented this type of idea, and here the Gemara expresses it in the, what I would call, natural law being violated. These are not sins of the Torah, these are sins of mankind, sins of natural law. Things that, even if you had no Torah, no guidance, these are ethics, morals, things that people would come to on their own. Do not steal, zima, also, licentious behavior, and don't speak the truth. All these things are very, very basic items that you would expect. Shisha dvarim nemrim besus. There are six things said about a horse. Ohevet znut, they love to have many partners. Ohevet amilchama, they love war. Verucho gasa, they are lofty animals. I mean, that's what it means to ride on your high horse.
Talking about the horse.
The horse itself, right. But the fact that when you're on a horse, you're high up, is the horse himself is a high animal. Meleset ashena, hates to sleep. And that's the idea that a horse sleeps standing up, well, with one eye open. Vochel harbe, they consume a large amount of food. Umotzi kima, but they produce very little in waste after they eat a lot. Yeshamim, afim v'keisha rog balav v'milchama. They also like to kill their riders in battle, probably from the experience of cavalry going to battle, that horses are scared and they try to throw off their riders in battle. So it's not so simple when you go into battle on a horse. If the horse is fearful, he may not only cause a problem for the enemies, but he causes a problem for the one who is riding him as well. Shiva menudim l'shamayim. There's seven people that are excommunicated from heaven, meaning that Hashem is unhappy with their behavior. Elohim, these are they. Yehudi shein lo isha, person who does not get married. V'sheyesh lo isha ve'en lo banim, someone who has a wife but does not have children. Now, as Tosafot points out over here, wait a minute. Some of these things here are not of his own doing. I mean, the fact that he doesn't have children is not necessarily his own fault. So he says that if you look in the context of the seven items, both item number one and number two are only when pshiato. It's his fault. If it's his fault that he doesn't have children, it's his fault that he's not married, then Hashem holds him responsible for that. But if it's not his fault, then we can't hold him responsible for that. It would be incorrect to assume that that's the case. Someone who has children but doesn't bring them up in Torah. Someone who does not wear tefillin on his arm and his head. And he doesn't have tzitzit on his beged. So here, interesting enough, also Tosfot raises the issue, which is, what do you mean? There's no obligation to wear tzitzit. Tzitzit is for yeshlo v'eino minichan. He has a four-cornered bag and he doesn't put him on. He has the ability to wear tzitzit and he doesn't put him on. And then he says, also with tefillin, we'll discuss that in 1 second, inami afilu einlo, even in case he doesn't have tzitzit, yesh lechazeru l'avi l'atzmo l'idei chiyuv. He should obligate himself. Even though you don't have a four-cornered bag, you should try to get a four-cornered bag, so you should have to wear tzitzit. Even though tzitzit is really an optional mitzvah, which is that it's only a question of if it's triggered. If you wear a four-cornered bag, then you must wear tzitzit. If you don't have a four-cornered bag, you don't have to wear tzitzit. So then here, the Tosafot is saying you have to go and try to wear a four-cornered bag, so then you will wear tzitzit. And if you see over here, there's the Gilyon HaShas. Gilyon HaShas points to a Gemara Menachot, Tana Menachot, found in Tanit as well, which is the Gemara there says about an Amora meeting with Eliyahu Navi. He discusses the fact that he is wearing a certain beged in the winter, a certain beged in the summer, and he's going to end up never having to wear tzitzit. And that's what Eliyahu criticizes him for not wearing tzitzit. And the person says, why? What's the problem? I'm not obligated in tzitzit. So there, the Gemara answers, or Eliyahu really answers, be'idana deritcha. The time of anger, Hashem punishes even on mitzvot aseh that you let go. So here you have a chance to do tzitzit, therefore you should do it because it's something positive, and Hashem, when he's angry, takes it out if you skipped over this mitzvah or you denied this mitzvah. The Rambam also, when he codifies halacha by tzitzit, talks about the greatness of tzitzit and the need to wear them even though you're not obligated, because there's a certain milah to wear the king's siman. And to have tzitzit on, that's why we wear tzitzit. We intentionally, today we don't, most of us don't have four-cornered begadim. We specifically wear a four-cornered beged so that we're chayav in tzitzit, and we put on tzitzit for that reason. Now, in terms of tefillin, here Tosafot speaks about the issue. It's clear that it's an issue in the time of the Rishonim, that they're very lax, both in the mitzvah of tzitzit, as well as the mitzvah of tefillin. It's mentioned here in Tosafot, it's mentioned in other places in Tosafot with regards to burying somebody in tzitzit. Why do we do that, and why do we don't do that? And over there, Tosafot discusses the fact that people weren't wearing tzitzit during their lifetime. Why should we put them on them when they are dead? It's a busha. They're putting on tzitzit when they're dead, and they never wore it during their lifetime. Tefillin was the same thing. People were not wearing tefillin in their day. Why? You need a gufnaki. They need a gufnaki to wear a tefillin, so therefore they were not wearing tefillin. In the time of the Amoraim, when we're talking about wearing tefillin, it means wearing tefillin all day. So gufnaki prevented people from doing it. But what ended up happening once they said in the gufnaki is they didn't wear tefillin whatsoever. So Tosafot over here makes the point, and it's clear that this is an issue in their time. Gufnaki just means you don't flatulate and do not sleep in them. To put them on for Kriyat Shema and not have this problem is pretty straightforward. We're not asking you to wear them all day. We're asking to have them on at least during Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim. So this idea of wearing tefillin only during davening is being promoted by the Rishonim because of the laxness in this mitzvah that people aren't putting on tefillin whatsoever. So that becomes what the practice that we have today is to put on tefillin during davening, which is a manageable, discrete amount of time where you can wear the tefillin and not have a problem of guf naki. So here, that's what they're pushing. That's again what he says over here, tefillin bizarro. We're not asking you to wear it all day. We're asking you to put on tefillin for the zman of tefillah. Now, mezuzah bitchol, it doesn't have a mezuzah on his door. But moneam menalim miraglav, someone who does not put on shoes on his feet. We saw that before, that a talmud chacham that goes around yachef is a gnai. Ve'eshomim af mi she'enu meisayiv bechabura shel mitzvah. Someone doesn't join into a mitzvah, a mishter mitzvah, or a feast of mitzvah, like that of a brit milah. Amar rabba barchanam rabbi shmo barmarta marab mishum rabbi yosi ish hutzal, minayim she'en sho'olim bekol daim. How do you know that you don't ask the Kol Dayim? Now, Rashi over here says Kol Dayim is a Baal Oath, whereas the Rashbam and Tosfos disagree and say that these are astrologers. These are the Babylonian astrologers. So, Neymar, Tamim Tia Im Hashem Lokecha. You must be wholesome, straight, dedicated to Hashem alone. So now, this is an interesting issue. We'll just bring it up. The reason in Rashi's interpretation maybe is wrong, because everywhere else in Shas, Rashi translates Kol Dayim or Kol Dai as being an astrologer, not being in a Baal Oath. And as Tosfot and the Rashbam point out, Baal Oath is explicit in the Pasuk, that you may not ask of the Baal Oath. So Tamim Tiyam Yonashal Kecha must be something besides a Baal Oath. So he says that's why they think it's talking about astrology. The problem that you have is that there are three other incidents in Shas where astrologers said something and has a large impact. One of them is the last daf, Gemara in Brachot, with Rabba and Rabbi Yosef. The Gemara wants to know over there, they asked, who should be the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabba or Rabbi Yosef? Rabba was an Oker Harim. Rabbi Yosef was a Sinai. He had a large breadth of knowledge. Rabba was able to be Mefalpel and to answer up questions. So they asked the question, Oker Harim v'Sinai, mi kodem? They answered back to them, Sinai kodem, Sinai goes first, because Sinai odif, because of kol tzrichin, the marech chitaya. Everybody needs the person who holds the wheat, meaning that everyone needs the basic material. Without the basic material, you can't do anything. Then, Rabbi Yosef does not become the Rosh Yeshiva, even though he was the Sinai. He waives his right to be Rosh Yeshiva and gives it to Rabba, because he had heard from Akal Dai, the Gemara says, that he was only going to be Malach for 2 years. He was only going to be Rosh Yeshiva for 2 years. So if he became Rosh Yeshiva, it was 2 years, and he'd be done. He'd be either die or something go wrong. So he opts to give Rabba the Rosh Yeshiva, who's for 22 years as Rosh Yeshiva, and all that time Rabbi Yosef lives, becomes Rosh Yeshiva, and it's for 2.5 years, and he passes away. So there you see that he got himself an extra 22 years, but he was listening to Akal Dai. Over there, the Gemara says that Akal Dai told him that when you rule, it's for 2 years. The other incident is Kuf Nun Vav in the Gemara in Shabbat, which two incidences over there. One incident is with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had heard from Akal Dai that his daughter was going to die on the day of her wedding, and he worried his whole life about that. So it says there, Rabbi Akiva was worried about it then. There's an incident there on the night of her wedding. She sticks her hairpin into the wall and goes through the snake. That's the one case. The other case is Rabbi Nachman Bar Yitzchak, where his mother was told by Akal Dai that he was going to be a thief. And she made him wear a yarmulke his whole life, so that he had Yirat Hashem on his head because of this Akal Dai. So we have three instances in Shas where Akal Dai say something, and it was taken seriously what the Akal Dai said, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Kiva, and Rabbi Nachman Bar Yitzchak. So how do you square that away with this Gemara? Well, Rashi has an easy answer, because he says Akal Dai over here is a Baal Oath. The Akal Dai over there is the astrologer, so he can differentiate along those lines. It solves his problem, even though it's difficult. But for the Rashbam and for Tosafot, who translated the simile in both places, what does that mean? A number of answers given. One of them is that you may not seek the advice of astrologers, but if they tell you something, in all those instances, the Kaldayim offered the information up without being asked. Well, if they offer the information, then you could worry about it. You don't have to believe it, but you can worry about it, because there's a certain amount of efficacy to this. This comes back to the machloka between the Ramban and the Rambam, but basically the different sects of Rishonim, the rationalists versus the non-rationalists, which is whether the astrology, Ov and Nidoni, have any real basis. Are they real, or are they simply all Sheker? The Rambam and the rationalists, Ibn Ezra, all believe that it's Sheker Gamur, and that's why Hashem, they command you not to listen to them, because there's no value there. And so therefore, Tamim Tiyayim Hashem Elkecha, because don't you want Sheker, you want truth. On the other hand, for those like the Ramban, who believe that these things have efficacy to them, Tamim Tiyayim Hashem Elkecha is, number one, go ask the Navi. Don't ask the Ovi Yudonian astrologer. Why? Because then a Navi has context. He has perspective. He's connected to Hashem. That what you hear from the astrologers, that's what you hear here, are not given context and are not given perspective, and therefore, it might be true, but it might only be true in a certain perspective or a certain context, and therefore you might get misled by that information, because they're only getting a piece of the puzzle, they're not getting the whole puzzle. And therefore, them, Tamim Tiyayim Mishem Lekecha. Obviously, for the Rambam, those Gemaras in Shabbat and Brachot will be very difficult. Minayin, Ayodea Bechavirosh Shu Gadol Mimenu Afilu B'Dvar Achad Shechayav Limbo Kavod. How do you know that if a person is greater than you, and even in one thing, that you have to give him kavod? As Tosafot points out over here, it's not someone who knows Torah and taught you something in Torah, because that's a separate obligation. It's even someone who didn't teach you Torah, that you're obligated to give them kavod. Shenemar,
Kol kavel di ruach yatira bei, umalka ashit lahakamute aho malchuta.
So this is in reference to Daryavish about Daniel, and he sees that because Daniel has this additional wisdom, or this special feature or characteristic about him, he wanted to make him the head of the whole nation. So you see that just because of that one character trait, that one feature that Daniel had that was special, Daryavish wants to give him that type of kavod. Yoshevet al-dam tohor asura l'shemesh, that a woman who is waiting for dam tohor. Dam tohor over here is after she gives birth, she has 7 days of tumah for a zachar and then 33 days of dam tahara. Even if she sees dam during that period, she remains tohor. And for Nekeva, she has 14 days of Tumah, and then for the additional 66 days after that, she has Dam Tehora, meaning that the Dam that she sees then is not problematic. When she reaches the 80th day or the 40th day for a Zachar, she's a Tovelet Yom, Aroch, the sun sets, that's the end of that period of time. She sees Dam that night, it's already Dam of Tumah. But because she's so used to seeing Dam and thinking that it's Tehora, therefore we say to her, take a break here, make some sort of buffer so that she understands that the dam she sees now is dam tameh. So Yeshivat Adam Tor Asura the Shemesh, she shouldn't be together with her husband the night after that 80th day or the night after the 40th day. Because of this issue, we want to separate between the dam tahor and the dam tameh. Ad kama, how long is that separation, that buffer? Onah, it's one period of time. Right, she claims an onah here is yom vilayla, which means 24 hours. The Rishbam takes issue with Rashi because everywhere else in Shas, when we talk about an Onah, it talks about either Oyom or Laila. It's a 12-hour period. It either means day or night. And that's the way that we explain it in the Gemara Nida with regards to separating from one's wife prior to the point in time where she expects to have her Veset do it one Onah beforehand. That Onah is either Yom Valaila. It's 12 hours beforehand, not 24 hours beforehand. Tana, Hu Yosef Ishutzau, Hu Yosef Abavli. So, if you see in Chas, Yosef Ishutzau, that's synonymous with Yosef Abavli. Hu Isi ben Gurarye, Hu Isi ben Yehuda, Hu Isi ben Gamliel, Hu Isi ben Mehalel. So this individual is all the same individual. Humashmo, what's his real name? Isi ben Akavya Shimo, that's his real name. Hu Rabbi Yitzchak ben Tavla, Hu Rabbi Yitzchak ben Chakla, Hu Rabbi Yitzchak ben Ilah. Those are three names that are speaking about the same individual. Rabbi Yitzchak ben Acho de Shmaito. Whenever you have a member on Shas that mentions Rabbi Yitzchak Stam, that's referring to Rabbi Yitzchak ben Acho. Rabbi Yitzchak ben Pinchas de Agadato. If you find a Stam Rabbi Yitzchak with regards to Agadato, that's referencing Rabbi Yitzchak ben Pinchas. B'simaneich, and the sign that you can keep is Shema'uni Achai Ve'ami. And therefore, the association of Shmaitata, Shema'uni, and Acha, and Achai, makes it that Rabbi Yitzchak ben Acha is the Rabbi Yitzchak that's associated with the Shmaitata. Amar Rabbi Barchana, Rabbi Yochanan, Mishmeid, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Ilai, Achol Batzal, eat onions, V'shev Batzal, and sit in the shade or the shadow. V'lo tichol avzin, don't eat fat geese, v'tarnagolim, and chickens, and then your heart will be chasing after you. So here is a suggestion that you should eat vegetables and not meat. That way you don't have these desires or cravings for meat, which are going to cause you to have large expenditures which you cannot afford. Rather eat the vegetables which will not cause you these cravings and are simple and you can afford them. And therefore, you will be successful at staying in your house because you won't have to sell your house to support your lifestyle. And so if you keep your food habits simple, you'll be able to keep your house and you'll be in the shade of your house. Pachot mechalchal mishtecha, you should eat less than your food or your drink. Both perspectives. One is your expenditure should be less than you can afford. You should live below your means. And in addition to that, you shouldn't fill yourself up totally. You shouldn't eat or drink as much as you can. You should drink or eat until you're satisfied, but not more. Tosif al diratecha. And then you can use the excess to expand your house. Ki atula amar matla matlin b'marova. He says they have a mashal that they give in Eretz Yisrael. Da'achil al yato, the one who eats the tail fats. Tashi Balito. Then when they come to collect the loans that he has outstanding, he goes and he hides because he doesn't have what to repay with. Da'achel kule, the one who eats vegetables. Akikle de matoshochi, if he sits on top of the garbage dump of the city, not as a negative, but as a positive, he doesn't mind anybody who sees him. People come collect the money, he has what to pay them with because he hasn't used up all of his means to purchase the fatty meat that he wants for his desires, but rather he's a simple individual. He eats the vegetables, and that's how he will have savings and be able to repay his creditors. Okay, we'll stop over here.